Born with a rare birth defect and living in a Russian orphanage, Elena had little chance of ever walking. But when her adoptive family brought her home, they found help and hope at a Shriners hospital where she was fitted with prosthetic feet.
We wouldn't be where we are if Shriners hadn't taken care of us.
Shriners hospitals offer some of the world's best orthopedic spinal cord and burn medical care to children totally free of charge. And they combine that care with innovative teaching and progressive research programs.
Shriners Hospital made a difference not only with the medical side of it, but the human side of it, and making it a family experience for us.
Today, Elena is an unstoppable six-year-old.
I don't think there's even words to really thank Shriners for everything they've done. Their care is phenomenal.
There's a Shriners Hospital helping kids from this area. If you know a child they could help, call 1-800-237-5055 for more information. Shriners, having fun and helping kids.
Thank you for listening to the TalkStar Radio Network. For the finest and informative and interactive talk radio programming, it's the TalkStar Radio Network, available live via your local radio station and on the Internet at TalkStarRadio.com. Your feedback is important to us. Email us at TalkStarRadio.com.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good evening, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. The topic of the hour in Washington, probably the topic all the next 2 months, will be who is Judge Samuel Alito, the president's current nominee for the Supreme Court. You recall that his last nominee, Harriet Myers, who he said was the most well-qualified person, that we didn't need a judge, didn't want some Ivy League elitist being a nominee. Well, the conservatives did not like Harriet Myers. Frankly, a lot of the Democrats were unimpressed by her qualifications as well. But the conservatives were unimpressed, well, with her judicial philosophy. They weren't sure that she was one of them, and they got very upset, and so George Bush, ever mindful of his right-wing base, kicked her out the door. Well, Judge Samuel Alito doesn't have that problem. He is hailed by the religious right and by conservatives of all stripes as one of them. Indeed, his nickname by both his defenders and detractors is Scalito. Of course, that comes from Justice Scalia, the most right-wing person on the bench today. But is Judge Samuel Alito a Scalito? Will he move to the court in the right? Is he another vote for Justice Scalia? Many argue that Clarence Thomas was another vote for Justice Scalia. To help answer those questions, I've invited Professor Jamin Raskin of American University. He's a professor of constitutional law at American University's College of Law to tell us who is Judge Samuel Alito. And if you have some questions, get them in early. Toll-free number is 877-528-8255. Professor Raskin, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Thank you for having me.
Well, let's start with the basic question before we get to a lot of specifics. He's been called Scalito. Is that nickname fair?
Well, let's see. In an ideological sense, it probably is fair. He tends towards very strong conservative moralism in cases dealing with abortion and the right to privacy. He's not much of a feminist. He usually can be found on a defendant's side in a sex discrimination case. He is a strong champion of executive power, and he doesn't have quite as biting and caustic a style as Justice Scalia does, and people describe him as a warm and affable guy. I've not met him, so I don't know. The important point is that the seat that he has been nominated to fill has been a swing seat with Justice O'Connor. She has tended a bit more conservative, but in recent years has been with the liberals on the court on issues like gay rights, like abortion, often on free speech in church and state, although with the conservatives on criminal procedure, executive power, and so on. But I think that the reason why this is going to be a very divisive and polarizing nomination is he clearly is much more like Justice Scalia or Justice Thomas in his thinking than O'Connor, and so it really does shift the weight of authority on the court towards the right.
Well, of course, Judge Alito, unlike, say, Harriet Myers, or even to a large extent Chief Justice John Roberts, has a long judicial past. He's been on the appellate court for some 15 years. Of course, Judge Roberts had only been there for 2 years, and Harriet Myers hadn't been a judge at all. So I'd like to go in detail, if I can, case by case, to make up your case, Professor, as to why he is, in many ways, another Scalia on the court. The first thing you mentioned, of course, the thing that is always mentioned whenever you talk about a judge being appointed to the United States Supreme Court is the right to privacy, specifically the case of abortion. And his most famous ruling is his dissent in the Casey decision. Could you tell our audience about that?
Well, right. He voted with the majority on the Third Circuit on most of the other provisions, the 24-hour waiting period provision, the parental consent provision requiring teens to get a parent's consent before an abortion or else go before a judge to ask for consent. The one provision that was struck down in the Pennsylvania law by the Third Circuit was the one that required women to notify their husbands before they got an abortion and to sign a sworn statement that they had apprised their husbands of their decision to get an abortion before they get one. This was too much for the majority in the Casey decision, including Justice O'Connor, who cast the decisive vote striking that provision down. So this seems like a pretty clear test case of where he stands with respect to O'Connor, and he clearly is to her right on the abortion issue. And, you know, one reason that people on the conservative wing of the Republican Party were so jubilant yesterday is he seems to be a pretty clear vote against Roe versus Wade generally.
Professor, let me just ask you, because I don't know, I know the Casey decision, but I'm not I don't know in detail the underlying Pennsylvania law. If a woman, she signs a sworn statement that she's notified her husband, presumably if she's lying, she could be prosecuted for perjury. Was there a provision in there if she couldn't find her husband or he was unwilling to hear or any sort of out provision?
There were several exceptions. I mean, one is if she wasn't sure if he were in fact the father, you know, by whom she was pregnant. Another is if he couldn't be found. Another is if the pregnancy was a result of a marital rape. And so there were four or five exceptions. But Justice O'Connor wrote a rather convincing opinion in which she said, look, the vast majority of women who are married are, of course, going to talk to their husbands about it, and the only ones who are not going to are going to be the ones who fear different kinds of violence or reprisal or threats or what have you. And you cannot liken adult women to children. Now, in the Casey decision, the court said that...
Professor, we have to take a break, but we'll be right back with your calls as well right after this.
Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom, one of the best shows television ever offered. Now you can travel again with Marlon Perkins to the farthest reaches of the globe and study wild animals in their natural habitats. The Emmy Award-winning Wild Kingdom, now available on DVD. Order online at RetroTelevision.com and get 20 full-length episodes for $29.99. You'll see gorillas, elephants, giraffes, zebras, hippos, and more. Also memorable, three episodes featuring legendary primate researcher Diana Fossey from Gorillas in the Mist. 20 episodes of Wild Kingdom on DVD for $29.99. Go to RetroTelevision.com or, if you forget, log on to www.TalkStarRadio.com and check out our video store. Save $10 on Wild Kingdom now at RetroTelevision.com.
They were charged with finding an all-water route to the Pacific, yet less than half of them knew how to swim. They nearly starved, ran out of supplies, and failed in their primary mission. So why 200 years later do Lewis and Clark still fascinate us? Maybe it's because it was a military expedition notable for battles that didn't happen. Or because the Indians they met gave them food, horses, and guidance. Maybe it's the teenage mother and the slave who were allowed to speak their minds. Or was it because they chronicled a breathtaking and abundant American landscape? For 3 years, Lewis and Clark traveled a trail of tolerance, enlightenment, and adventure that we'd soon find out was too good to be true. It's a trail that still winds through us all. What can we learn from a 200-year-old story? Walk with Lewis and Clark at lewisandclark200.org and see what you discover.
This is a public service message of the National Council of the Lewis and Clark Bicentennial, the Missouri Historical Society, and the Ad Council.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We're discussing the presidential nominee to the Supreme Court to replace Harriet Myers, who withdrew recently, citing executive privilege, though virtually everyone watching the court agrees that, and watching the president, in fact, that executive privilege was not the reason she withdrew. In fact, the reason was the very unenthusiastic reception she was getting on Capitol Hill and by conservative activists. Judge Samuel Alito is getting, on to the contrary, a very positive reaction. And part of the reason for that is his decisions on the right of a woman to choose an abortion and right to privacy. And we were talking about that when we had to go to the break with my guest, Professor Jamin, right?
Jamin Raskin.
I want to pronounce your first name correctly. Jamin Raskin, professor of constitutional law at American University's College of Law. You were saying before the break, Professor, that that Justice O'Connor pointed out that this requirement that women notify their husbands treats women like children, and that
she didn't say it exactly like that, but what she said was that the provision dealing with minors was justifiable because parents have an interest in controlling the medical care of their kids. I mean, even if kids go in for a tonsillectomy or, you know, an appendicitis, the parents still have to sign the forms, and so why should abortion be treated any differently? But the point was that a grown woman can make her own decision about abortion, either without getting the consent of her husband or even without notifying him, which O'Connor thought would happen in the vast majority of cases anyway, except when the woman has a strong reason in her own mind for not consulting her husband.
Professor, you mentioned it wasn't just abortion, that it might be other rights to privacy or gay rights. What other right to privacy cases are there where Judge Alito has wanted to restrict a person's privacy?
Well, actually, I mean, one case that went in the other direction was he wrote a concurring opinion, I think it was, in a New Jersey case dealing with a law that banned partial birth abortions, and he said that under existing Supreme Court precedent, the way the law had been written was unconstitutional. Now, that doesn't tell you how he'll come down on Roe versus Wade, because once he's in the Supreme Court, he's the final lawgiver. But
it doesn't even tell you how he'd rule on partial birth abortion, because all he's saying is, as a lower court judge, I have to follow the higher court, which virtually every judge except Chief Justice Moore of Alabama would agree with that basic principle.
Yeah. I mean, I think the place where he's going to make a big difference is in the church-state field. You know, in these Christmas nativity scene cases, for example, Judge Alito has bent over backwards to allow municipalities to put up Christmas nativity scenes and Hanukkah menorahs and so on public grounds against ACLU lawsuits. And basically the doctrine is it's unconstitutional if it's just Jesus, Mary, and Joseph and the wise men and the Hanukkah menorah. But if you throw in Frosty the Snowman and Santa Claus and a Christmas tree and some jingle bells and some reindeer, at that point it's no longer a religious display, but it's a mixed religious secular display that just evokes the holiday season. And so he's been very much kind of taking that ball from the Supreme Court and running with it to allow holiday displays in this way. So,
Professor, let me ask you about some issues that are sort of not typical, I guess, religious right issues, but definitely matter to the American people. And one of the most famous was on the Family and Medical Leave Act. What's interesting to me is that a lot of people on the right claim that they want judges who are not judicial activists, that are not willy-nilly overturning acts of Congress, people who are respecting the original intent of the framers and so forth. But correct me if I'm wrong, didn't he invalidate the Family and Medical Leave Act as applied to the state of Pennsylvania under a doctrine, sovereign immunity, that has no basis in the Constitution?
He actually ended up dissenting from a Third Circuit case which upheld it.
Okay.
But yes, he took the, it wasn't a sovereign immunity doctrine. He basically took the position that Congress didn't have the power to pass the Family Medical Leave Act and to allow state employees to sue state agencies for damages.
Well, it wasn't based on state sovereign immunity? Was it based on congressional power?
Well, basically saying that Congress had not abrogated the state immunity. So that's right. But basically, he gave a very strict construction of what Congress had done in that case. And in general, you know, he is going to join that faction on the court, which has been madly striking down federal statutes. And the Rehnquist Court is the most activist court in American history in terms of dismantling federal laws, like the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, the Gun-Free School Zones Act, parts of the Americans with Disabilities Act, parts of the Violence Against Women Act, and so on. This is a court, as you were saying, which has been wildly activist in its willingness to strike down popularly elected laws. And a lot of what they are doing is narrowly circumscribing and reading the powers of Congress to enforce equal protection and other guarantees of the Bill of Rights.
I'll tell you why I bring up the Family Medical Leave Act, Professor, and I do hope also the Democrats will emphasize that one politically, not just because it's a very popular idea that, in fact, when people have sick relatives or spouses, they can take off work without losing their jobs. Employers may not like it, but sort of a basic sense of fairness, I think most Americans would support that. But because he did it on the basis of an obscure doctrine that you and I know about as lawyers, but I think a lot of people don't understand, the one of state sovereign immunity. One of my favorite professors at Yale Law School, Akhil Amar, hates this doctrine because it really, there's zero basis in the Constitution. The doctrine comes from the idea from the British that the crown cannot be sued, the king cannot be sued, and maybe that makes sense in a royal system, but it certainly doesn't make sense in an American democracy, and yet this kind of read-in right is exactly the same kind of thing conservatives attack in Roe v. Wade, but they love it when it comes to state sovereign immunity. I don't know if you have a comment on that.
You know, and it puts Judge Alito way to the right of Justice O'Connor, who was part of the 6-3 majority, I think it was, which upheld the Family Medical Leave Act and said that it was a perfectly appropriate exercise of federal power to combat gender discrimination because the states, you know, had this long history of you know, basing their leave policies on the idea that, you know, women should take care of sick people and take the kids to the soccer games and so on, and men couldn't do it. Well, that's something that Judge Alito is not going to like. And so, yeah, my recollection is he said that Congress had not tried to abrogate state sovereign immunity, and if it did, it lacked the power to do so, which is a pretty radical statement.
The toll-free number, folks, is 877-528-TALK, 877-528-8255. When we come back, I want to talk about Judge Samuel Alito's personal affinity for machine guns. No, not that he likes to shoot them, but he doesn't think that Congress has a right to regulate them if you just sell a couple in your state. We'll be right back with that decision and your calls right after this.
There are a lot of people out there making claims of miracle cures for this or that, but they're usually anonymous. Margie Garrison, who they call the Arthritis Lady, gives you her name and tells you her story. In July 1979, Margie was amazed when her doctor uttered the words, "Arthritis is the easiest disease there is to cure." What a difference from what she'd heard for 43 years, that there was no cure for arthritis. We don't have time here, but to learn the secret Margie learned, get to a computer and log on to healthstarproducts.com. It's guaranteed or your money back, and you have a full year to decide. Look it up for yourself online at healthstarproducts.com. HealthStar, H-E-A-L-T-H, HealthStarProducts.com.
Little Timmy Kelly's premature birth left him blind and with little chance of ever walking. Then his parents found help and hope at Shriners Hospitals for Children. Shriners combine expert orthopedic spinal cord and burn medical care with world-class research and teaching programs, and there's never a charge. Today, Timmy lives a full and active life. There's a Shriners Hospital helping kids from this area. If you know a child they could help, call 1-800-237-5055 for more information. Shriners, having fun and helping kids.
When you're weary In times of trouble, in times of crisis, the American Red Cross is there, providing shelter, a warm meal, a helping hand. Victims of disasters need your help now. Your support for the American Red Cross Disaster Relief Fund makes help possible. Call 1-800-HELP-NOW or visit redcross.org today.
Over troubled water, I will lay me down.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We're learning who the presidential nominee to the Supreme Court is. Who is Samuel Alito? I'm discussing it with Professor Jamin Raskin, professor of constitutional law at the American University College of Law. We're talking about various decisions that he did, and one of his most infamous, I guess, involved machine guns. Can you tell me about that decision, Professor? Do you know about
It goes back to 1995 when a five-justice majority on the Supreme Court struck down a federal law against possessing a gun within 1,000 feet of a school, which was the Gun-Free School Zones Act, and they said that Congress lacked the authority to pass such a law under the Commerce Clause because there was really no substantial effect on interstate commerce if all of the gun activity was taking place just within the state. So Alito liked that holding and decided to run down the court with that, and he dissented from a Third Circuit decision which upheld a federal ban on machine gun possession, and he basically said we can use the logic of the Gun-Free School Zones Act case here. There's no reason to think that this affects interstate commerce or the substantial effect on it. So he doesn't necessarily love machine guns, but he's willing to squint very hard at congressional legislation passed under the Commerce Clause, especially if he, like other conservatives, don't like what Congress is basically up to there.
Well, that I think is the heart of the question, whether this is a guy who is applying the law as best he can or is applying the law to get a certain result. I mean, I don't know if it was this particular statute in question, but I am aware that machine guns have been banned in this country since the 1930s, so clearly this isn't a new issue. There in the 90s when he's talking about striking down the congressional ban. So I guess that's the heart of my question. I don't know that it's an easy one to give in a short answer, but does this strike you as a judge who's applying principles in the law and then dealing with conclusions wherever they fall? Or at the end of the day, is this a judge who is, in essence, using specific principles that he likes to get results that he likes?
Well, I'm going to go with the latter to the extent that he's part of a movement in law, the Federalist Society, the right-wing conservatives in law, who have a very clear ideological agenda. And you can kind of go down the Bill of Rights and pick out the rights that they like and the rights that they don't like and the ones that they want to strictly construe and the ones that they want to broadly construe. Equal protection gives very little power to Congress to legislate against civil rights, but equal protection is extremely broad and muscular when it comes to invalidating affirmative action programs.
Well, see, that's the heart of the question. I mean, to me, the thing that most radicalized me of any Supreme Court opinion in history, at least in my living history, of course, was the decision in Bush v. Gore, where conservatives claim before Bush v. Gore to love states' rights. They want states' rights to be construed very broadly. They want equal protection to be construed very narrowly. And yet in the Bush v. Gore decision, when if they allow Florida to count all its votes, as the Florida Supreme Court said they could do under Florida law, Bush might lose, and therefore, five justices switched their opinions on all these vital issues.
Suddenly the Equal Protection Clause was on steroids and was like Superman.
And states' rights were meaningless.
And all of it was to jump to the defense of one guy, George W. Bush, who wasn't even a voter in the state of Florida, and to stop the counting of 175,000 ballots that were left on the table in Florida, terminating a presidential election by Supreme Court fiat for the first time in our history. So it was a pretty remarkable display of judicial activism, completely brazen, that would have, prompted calls for revolution by the right wing had it been liberals doing it to stop the counting of ballots that might have led to a Republican victory. So I think you're right, and I think everybody can see that. Another example is the Supreme Court dismantling majority black and Hispanic congressional districts, beginning with Shaw versus Reno. There's no equal protection rule that says you can't have a bizarrely drawn majority white district, but suddenly a bizarrely drawn, whatever that means, majority black or Hispanic district is presumptively unconstitutional just because, you know, it all played into their campaign against quotas and affirmative action and so on. Well, then it turns out that these districts help the Republican Party, and suddenly they quietly pull the plug on that doctrine, and you don't hear much about it anymore. But
Professor Ruskin, we have to take another break. But when we come back, I want you to play counsel for the Democrats on the Senate Judiciary Committee for a moment. You have just said that you agree with me that this is a judge who, instead of applying neutral principles to come out with whatever results that matter, is in fact twisting the principles to come out with things he likes. And when we come back, I want you to give me, as a lawyer, your best argument, your best case, if you will, of Samuel Alito applying principles to get a very conservative result. If you want to call in, it's 877-528-TALK. We'll be right back.
This is Newsbreak. President Bush has a $7 billion plan to battle bird flu. He says the country must prepare for the possibility now because waiting until it happens will be too late. Supreme Court nominee Samuel Alito has been paying courtesy calls on the senators who will be voting on his confirmation. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld says it's unlikely the United Nations will be allowed to send investigators to the Guantanamo Bay, Cuba prison camp. The judge in former House Majority Leader Tom DeLay's conspiracy and money laundering case has been ordered to step aside. DeLay's lawyers successfully argued that Judge Robert Perkins couldn't judge the case impartially. Stocks fell slightly today. The Dow lost 33 points to 10,407. The NASDAQ fell 6 points to 2114. S&P 500 closed 4 points lower at 1202. And Federal Reserve has increased interest rates a quarter point to a flat 4%. More news at usaradio.com.
Oh, 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 overstock.com.
Oh, 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 the big, big O, overstock.com. The perfect place for PDAs like Casio and Palm. Oh, 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 the big, big O, overstock.com. The online place to buy your gifts for your dad and mom. No fighting the crowd. Stay cozy at your house. Easy way to shop. Just point and click your mouse. Many things to choose, like movies, TV, shoes, sporting, betting, jewelry too, all things you can use.
Santa's a little behind this year. I'm going online to overstock.com. Shipping for just $2.95.
Oh, 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 the big, big O, overstock.com. The online place to buy your gifts for your dad and mom.
Oh, overstock.com.
I'm Joe Graydon, and this is our daily update from the People's Pharmacy on the TalkStar Radio Network. The screening test that most doctors rely on to detect prostate cancer is called PSA, which stands for prostate-specific antigen. A new study shows that although this blood test is easy to use, it's not very accurate in detecting prostate cancers. Nearly 19,000 men with no prostate cancer and with PSA levels of 3 or lower were followed for 7 years. No single cutoff level of PSA detected all or most of the cancers, with few false positives. Even non-cancerous prostates can elevate PSA when they're enlarged, and some cancers don't cause much elevation in PSA until they're fairly advanced. Some physicians suggest that men should be aware of their PSA levels and get further tests if they begin to rise.
This is Terry Graydon with the People's Pharmacy on the TalkStar Radio Network.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We're discussing the new presidential nominee to the Supreme Court. His name is Samuel Alito, and we're discussing him with Professor Jamin Raskin, professor of constitutional law at American University. He has to leave after this segment, so if you want to call in and talk to him, you need to do so now. The toll-free number is 877-528-TALK, 877-528-8255. You can also write in on the blog I know some of you like to write in rather than call in. That's okay, too. Just go to www.radioinsidescoop.com. Professor Raskin, before the break, I asked you to help out the Democrats on the Senate Judiciary Committee. Make the case, if you will, that this is a guy that cares more about conservative results than neutral legal reasoning, and give me your best example.
Well, I think we're going to have to do...
Or several, if you like.
Well, we've got to, I think, do an intensive tutorial for the American people into the 11th Amendment, which in its literal reading basically just says that that citizens cannot sue states in federal courts. And
can't sue another state, right? A state that's not their own.
Not their right. That citizens cannot sue other states in federal courts.
In other words, I don't live in Georgia. I can't sue the state of Georgia, but I can still sue my home state, right?
That's right. In other words, if you just read it in its literal terms, it says you cannot sue one of the other 49 states that you don't live in federal court. Okay, fair enough. Well, that's been extended, especially by conservative justices, to say you cannot sue another state in a state court. And now what they're claiming is that you can't sue your own court. And then Alito took a fourth step to say in the family medical leave case that that you can't even, that Congress cannot give people under the Equal Protection Clause the right to sue their own states for violating a federal statutory right in state court or federal court, which is a pretty amazing thing. Now, in what sense is that what they want to call strict construction or, you know, judicial restraint?
Professor Raskin, I agree with you 100%, but as someone who is not just a lawyer, but someone who has worked in Congress, I have to tell you it's very hard to get a 30-second ad on the 11th Amendment. We have to make it a little more snappy. The thing about abortion, for good or probably for ill, is that it's something that everyday American can understand. That's why when I talk about state sovereign immunity, I don't even mention the 11th Amendment. I simply say, you know, they want to treat the states like they're beyond the law. But we have to think of sort of, I don't know, something. Do you think that will hit home with the American people, that the 11th Amendment? I just don't think it will, as much as I strongly agree with you that it's
well,
a solid legal point.
Well, it's a tough thing, because I do think that the senators have to slug it out kind of in the doctrinal trenches on these things. But at the level of a national campaign, I think the real question has just got to be we're losing a moderate, and they're putting a right-wing conservative on the court. And we have to look at the overall balance of the court. And this is a guy who, on a whole host of issues, is going to take us over the cliff. I think our rhetoric there has got to be one of balance and maintaining, the delicate balance that's on the court.
Well, let me switch then from law to politics before you go and ask you, do you think the Democrats are going to filibuster Judge Scalia? I'm sorry. Boy, that was a 14th slip. Judge Alito.
It's a little bit too late for that one, well, let's see. I think that, a lot of it comes down to Joe Lieberman and his gang of 12 or 13 or whatever it was that back when Bush was riding high, were very eager to make some kind of compromise to be, seen as moderates and so on. I think if those guys are willing to show the kind of, solidarity
backbone
and group commitment that the Republicans habitually show as they walk in lockstep, then I think they could go for the filibuster and just say, we're trying to preserve the balance on the Supreme Court that has protected the rights and liberties of the people.
I actually think, in my own view, a filibuster will happen. I think one of the reasons I think that is because even some of the Republicans, admittedly the more moderate Republicans, people like Leakin Chafee of Rhode Island, are saying they have problems with Alito as understood. And so I think there's actually a decent shot of it. Now, I've gotten a lot of comments on the blog, and some of them think it's unfair for me or perhaps for you to be judging Judge Alito until there are hearings. Let me respond for me, and then I'll let you certainly respond. In my view, I didn't judge – I'll just speak for myself. I didn't judge John Roberts until the hearings because, frankly, he didn't have a long record. Harriet Myers, well, I was willing to wait and see, but then I wait and I saw that she was simply unqualified, and so I posed her. But this is a guy who has a long record, and so I don't think it's unfair for us to say, we don't like him even before the hearing. So is it unfair, do you think, Professor?
Well, no, I don't think it's unfair, and – you know, I mean, the guy's got a very long track record and paper trail of what his views are. And I mean, people should, you know, put away these games of make-believe. I mean, there are two radically opposing philosophies of our Constitution, which, you know, go to underlying visions of what America is about. I think the liberals have always wanted to say that we look at the structure of government through the rights and liberties of the people, which have to be foundational and presumptive, and the conservatives increasingly are siding with the powers of government, the powers of a strong executive branch, and against the liberties of the people. And so these are just two different approaches to what a Supreme Court justice should be. I mean, we like justices like William Brennan and Thurgood Marshall and people who are going to stand up for social progress and the rights of the citizenry, and they like people like Scalia or Rehnquist or Thomas or Judge Alito, who are going to have a much narrower and a much more pinched construction of the rights and liberties of the people, and a much more expansive conception of the powers of government and the powers of corporations.
Yeah, I was just going to add, it's not just government versus the people, though I agree with you on that. It's also corporations versus workers, and we find that the conservative movement is always supporting corporations and big business against workers. Before we go, I have one very specific question on the blog. I don't know if you know this case, but Jeff in Jersey asked if the guest can comment on the 2001 decision Alito authored, Sachs v. State, that declared unconstitutional a public school district policy that prohibited harassment against students because of their sexual orientation. In other words, the listener is saying that the public school policy prohibited harassment against gay kids, but Alito authored a decision declared that unconstitutional. Are you aware of that decision?
Yes. Well, there was an anti-harassment policy that was very broadly written, and there were a lot of vague terms in it. And it's clear that Alito, like some of the other conservatives, are very eager to stand up for First Amendment rights when they perceive the people whose rights are at stake to be, you know, right-wingers, or in this case, I think it was fundamentalist Christians who felt like their anti-gay statements could fall under the prohibition against hate speech. So he did strike it down. I probably would have done the same thing, you know, as he did. And, I've written a book that's called We the Students, which is about the Supreme Court's treatment of the rights of students. He actually had one good decision that I came across a few years ago where there was a kid who was subject to a lot of taunting and ridicule and harassment precisely because he was perceived to be gay and not athletic and so on. And he wrote a decision saying that the school's failure to protect him constituted a violation of IDEA, the Individuals with Disabilities in Education Act, that they had to provide him protection in a situation like
that. And Alito wrote that decision.
That was a good opinion.
Okay, so Alito actually wrote a decision in favor of a gay kid being harassed.
Yeah, protecting a gay kid or imposing upon the school the obligation to protect a gay kid
or
a putatively gay kid.
I know you have to go, but briefly, how is that decision, the one that I think you and I approve of, different from the decision that my listener is talking about? What was the difference there?
Well, the first one's a First Amendment case where a school wrote a very broad ban on hate speech, and it was basically anything that could be interpreted to be disparaging or critical of another person's race, religion, ideology, politics, personality. I mean, it was just extremely sweeping. And so I think it was a fundamentalist group that went in and said, the things that we say at school about homosexuality, we're afraid are going to be targeted by this speech code, and they went to court, and he struck it down as a violation of the First Amendment. But I think that,
I agree with you, that
the conservatives would show as much solicitude towards the kind of speech that they don't like as they do towards the speech that they do like.
Professor Raskin, you've given us tremendous insight. Thank you very much for coming here on The Inside Scoop.
It's my pleasure.
If you want to call in, there's still a lot to talk about. What are the politics of this? There are a number of cases. In fact, there was a terrific article by Cass Sunstein in the Washington Post giving example after example of Judge Alito and his opinions. You know, I think this is a guy that we're not prejudging if we simply read what he's already written. If you want to call in, toll free, 877-528-TALK, 877-528-8255, or comment on the blog at radioinsidescoop.com. We'll be right back after this.
Do you sell dietary supplements? If so, you may know that the Food and Drug Administration and the Federal Trade Commission regulate your sales presentations. Violation of the federal rules can lead to stiff penalties. You really must know the law. Fortunately, help is just a phone call away. Law Talk Incorporated has produced a CD series, 4-CD interviews with renowned attorney Jonathan W. Emord that explain the legal limits on sales presentations. The CD series guides you through FDA and FTC regulation, explaining the law that governs sales presentations, website content, and health claims, as well as global restrictions on supplement sales. This is a must-buy for network marketers and supplement companies alike. To obtain the CD series, call 1-888-RU-FREE-1. 1-888-RU-FREE-1. That's 1-888-783-7331. Call today.
Tired of losing in the casinos and being in the hole? Learn how to win at Blackjack with Blackjack for Winners. Call 1-800-214-7012. 1-800-214-7012. This is the DVD the casinos do not want you to see. According to Tommy Hyland, a legendary blackjack professional, this DVD teaches an easy way to count cards and beat the casinos at their own game of blackjack. It takes only three easy steps. One, basic strategy. Two, card counting. And three, money management. It's just that easy to beat the casinos at their own game of blackjack. Order right now and you'll receive two instructional DVDs, 52 flashcards making basic strategy a snap, and a reference card you can take into the casinos with you. All of this for only $29.95 plus shipping and handling. Order today at 1-800-214-7012. 1-800-214-7012. Start learning to win at Blackjack today with Blackjack for Winners. 1-800-214-7012. 1-800-214-7012. From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We're talking about the presidential nominee for the Supreme Court, Samuel Alito, who some call Scalito, saying that he is simply a clone of Scalia, the Justice Scalia. And I was talking with my producer, actually, during the break about what I was talking about with my guest right before the break, and that is two court decisions, one which banned hate speech, banned speech that could be seen as harassment, which the judge found unconstitutional and struck down as a violation on free speech. And another one where it said that a kid who was being harassed because he was perceived as gay could sue his school for not protecting him. And my producer points out, quite rightly, that those things sound like they're contradictory. I mean, after all, if you, in one instance, you're allowing kids to harass another kid because they're different, whether, you know, race or religion or sexual orientation. And the other, you're prohibiting the harassment. I mean, what is a school to do if they can't have a policy prohibiting harassment because that violates free speech? And then if kids are harassed, they're sued for that violation. It's a strong point my producer made. Let me try to see if I can thread the needle and draw that extremely fine line, which comes up in all kinds of cases. I think the heart of the difference, and I haven't read those two cases, but I would hope at least that the difference is, and at least in my mind, if I were the judge, this would be the difference, would go the difference between oral harassment and physical harassment. People have the right, I think, to say some pretty vicious stuff. Although, I actually would go further, I think, than Judge Alito and say that in the context of school, I think you can control free speech. I don't think a student has the right to call another student the N-word, a black student, or to taunt with racist or homophobic comments because it disrupts the school. And while kids have the right to have their views, I don't think the school is a free marketplace of ideas like a public park or a sidewalk where you are allowed just to taunt people, where clearly you have the right to do that on your own property or on public property. So now that I think about it, I disagree with Alito's decision to allow the oral taunting. But I certainly agree with him, his decision to prohibit the physical taunting, which I suspect happened, where the case, as I remember it, was the kid was actually getting beaten up as perceived for being gay, and that the teachers were basically looking the other way because they were also homophobic. And clearly, a kid that's regularly beaten up at school has the right to redress, and so I certainly support him in that case. I do want to read some of the comments on the blog because there are a number of you that say some interesting things. One is Robert, who talks about Harriet Myers being gone. And he writes, one thing for sure is that after hearing how Harriet Myers was the most qualified, the best person for the job, how Bush will stay the course with Harriet, whoever Alito is, he's only second best to Harriet. So how do conservatives boast Alito's nomination without putting Harriet down and stating Bush lied to the American people over Harriet? That's a great point, Robert. What I think conservatives know, as liberals know, as moderates know, as even the president knows, is of course Bush lied. Bush knew he was lying when he said it. Everyone knows Bush is a liar. And what's interesting about the Harriet Myers nomination is it joins all Americans as one to say he's a liar. You know, conservatives don't like to admit that Bush lied to get us into war, that he made up all this stuff about weapons of mass destruction and nuclear weapons, that, you know, even Vice President Dick Cheney had to commit treason in outing a CIA agent just to try to protect his lies. They don't want to talk about that. But when it comes to Harriet Myers, they were so unimpressed that of course they knew he was lying. We all knew Bush was lying. Robert, it's a solid point. You got it right there. Even conservatives know that George Bush is a liar. Let's go on to some other comments, though, because Jeff in Jersey attacks me, and I dealt with this point somewhat, but for prejudging Judge Alito. And I hope I've made my point clear that this is a guy with a long background. Now, Kip writes on the blog that Senator Dianne Feinstein, who voted against Roberts, said, I would hope that people on both sides would hold their fire, allow the Judiciary Committee to do its work, and not take a position until that work is completed. And Jeff in Jersey echoes that point by saying that Scalia on the brain. I guess he scares me. You know, Halloween was last night, and frankly, Scalia is the most scary judge I can think of. But Jeff in Jersey points out that Senator Schumer also agrees with Dianne Feinstein, the liberal Democrat from New York, agrees that they should hold their fire until the Judiciary Committee hears his testimony. Let me say that while I think that is appropriate conduct for senators, I think they should hold their fire until they hear what he has to say. After all, they can ask him questions under oath. They can ask him for papers and so forth. That's their job. I don't think they should prejudge the nomination. That's fine. I think we Americans sometimes have to take a very different role. As I said, I did not prejudge John Roberts, and at the end of the day, I held my nose and said I would have voted for him. It was a very close decision, but very slightly on balance, I thought I would vote for Roberts. And so I did hold off. He didn't have a long paper record. But here's the problem, Jeff and Kip, with us holding off. You have the right wing, everyone from Concerned Women for America to James Dobson to all the business interests and all of them immediately praising Judge Alito. Now, why aren't they holding off? Why aren't they waiting? Why aren't they saying, well, we need to wait and see that you don't automatically get to be a Supreme Court justice. We need to hear what he has to say before we decide whether to support him. They're not saying that either. They are immediately running to support him, just as they immediately ran to support Roberts. I didn't hear a single Republican, with the possible exception of moderate Republican Arlen Specter, but I didn't hear a single person, right-wing person say, oh, well, you know, we need to wait and see about John Roberts. I didn't hear that. Did you hear that? No, because they knew that if you build up a certain political spin, right? If you put forward this political pressure until it becomes almost a fait accompli, where everyone can expect, oh, well, you know, of course this guy's going to make it, then it gets harder to oppose him.
Hey, Mark,
that's the politics of all of that, but we're going to go to a break, and we'll be right back after this.
Oh, my goodness. I have absolutely no idea what happened.
I didn't hear the music.
Yeah, it just didn't play it.
I just kept going because I didn't hear the music.
Yeah, that's fine.
I like him better than carrots. Ain't I a stinker?
Your Morning with Jim Harrington and Friends. Monday through Friday, right here. The perfect program for the discriminating rabbit. A listen.
6 to 10 Eastern Time on the Talkstar Radio Network.
I've been reading online about a drug-free home treatment program that suggests you can be asthma-free. It's a program designed by an ex-asthmatic who claims she cured her own asthma. It's based on a little-known but astounding clinical trial at a major hospital. What would you give to be free of asthma, asthma symptoms, and sinus and allergy symptoms, to breathe easily, freely, naturally, in a relaxed way? This drug-free method, proven by clinical trials, is guaranteed or you get your money back, and you have 90 days to decide. Get to a computer now and go to healthstarproducts.com. That's www.healthstarproducts.com. Read about the asthma program, and if it doesn't do what it says it'll do for you, you get your money back, and you've got 90 days to decide. Go to healthstarproducts.com.
So, Kristen, how was Esther's baby shower?
Oh, great.
Yeah?
You know it's a girl, right?
Oh, wow. What's her name?
It's one of those names.
Excuse me?
You know, one of those names. Shakita, Juanita, Jaquita. Why do black people like those kinds of names anyway?
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. My theme music seems to be off a bit, but we'll fix that technical problem. We only got a few minutes left. And I guess it's important to, just to conclude to what I was saying before, as to why I think it is fair to judge this guy. Now, you know, I can change my mind, right? I mean, it is possible that this guy will demonstrate for me through brilliant answers to senators' questions that, in fact, he does deserve a seat on Supreme Court. I don't think everyone does deserve a seat on Supreme Court just because the president nominates them. I think that the judiciary hearings are very important. But I also think it's okay to say, look, judge, we have read 15 years of your opinions. We know that you think that a husband gets to control his wife's body. I mean, think about it. A woman has to divorce her husband if she's afraid of him to notify him about an abortion. The problem is that not so much if a judge is doing their best, which John Roberts at the end of the day told me at those judiciary hearings he would do. If he's doing his best to look at the law, look at the facts, render a decision, that doesn't disturb me so much as if he's a judge like Scalia, a judge who is out to impose his view of the world on all of us, to say that corporations always win over workers, the government always wins over an individual, or even though it's a complex 11th Amendment question, that states can't be sued, that states somehow are perfect, they can discriminate against their workers, they cannot allow them Family Medical Leave Act, even when, you know, someone is taking care of a dying spouse, because they're states, they're sovereigns, they're like the British king. And though it's a difficult topic to explain to people, you know, this jurisprudence of the 11th Amendment and all that, it's an important point. Do we have a judge who is looking at applying the law, or do we have a judge who is manipulating the law to get his view? And that's a real concern of mine. And so, yes, I will be watching these hearings. You know I'll be playing them for you on air. You know I'll be commenting on them. And I'm not saying that if I were a senator, I would vote against Alito. I'm saying I would wait and see. But unlike the other two examples, this is a guy with a record, and just as the conservatives are out front saying he's the next best thing since, well, Scalia, I have a right to say, you know, I don't like his prior rulings. One of the most interesting people, I think, typifies my fear of Judge Alito, and that's Jean LaRue of Conservative Women for America. She had not made a decision on Harriet Myers until she heard of a speech that Harriet Myers made back in the early 90s, saying that government should not legislate morality. Government should not legislate religion. And immediately she got her organization to oppose Harriet Myers. She thinks the government should legislate morality. She thinks the government should legislate religion. People like that scare me, and their enthusiastic acceptance of Judge Alito, they're not waiting for the hearings, scares me even more. And if Judge Alito turns out to be exactly what I fear, I do think the Democrats should filibuster. I do think they will filibuster. I think the country is ready to say, you know what, George Bush, you claimed when you ran for election that you were going to unite this country. You claimed you were going to look out for all Americans. Instead of looking out for that extremely small minority on the far religious right that wants the control of all our private lives, that minority that says that workers have no rights, that unions have no rights, that the government is all-powerful, that they can pick you up and put you in prison without even charging you with a crime, these are not American values. And if Judge Alito supports those values, then I have to say the Democrats should filibuster him. Now, obviously, what's the response? The Republicans say, well, they could do the nuclear option. They could get rid of the filibuster rule illegally, even though Senate rules prohibit getting rid of that rule. They would do so illegally and, in other words, force the Senate to break its own rules.